change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You can look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder. Better keep your guard up, cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to PodSkiwiwi. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, it has been a month. What have you been up to?
Oh, that's not for public consumption, Josh. No, not
yeah, well,
much, really.
You...
Just, working, living my life. Yourself?
Same old, same old. Nothing changes. The grind never stops. Mm-hmm. We're since we last recorded, though, we're a month closer to kickoff, so that's always a good thing. What you have been up to, though... at least via your social media platforms, is what's this about you getting the 2019 Grey Cup champion Ticats tattoo? What's going on?
I already got it on my forearm.
No. Oh, no.
It says 9-9 record, but Grey Cup champs. Yeah. No, I was just a bit bored. I don't know. That was quite a while ago now, but I just thought it was fun to tweet that out, see, get some reactions from like one person took me seriously, but the other ones knew that it was just tongue in cheek.
Someone took you seriously?
I think so. The one guy, once somebody said, wait until they actually win. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm not going to actually do that. Like, come on.
No, but I did see some nice interactions. Someone said you jinxed them. And then someone was like, well, he didn't get one last year and didn't win. So it's kind of, it's fun stuff, but let's set the record straight. You're not actually getting the tattoo, right?
No. I like the response. The bigger the tattoo, the more chance of them winning. I like that response.
So why don't you just tattoo your entire body like a tiger, and then put like a gray cup on the back with like 2019?
That's a good idea. I think there actually is a dude out there that is tattooed like a tiger.
Yeah.
Like his whole body. It's
and I think they got like tiger ears. Yeah, people do. People do some weird shit, man.
Yes, very much so.
All right, let's move on from your weird full body tiger tattoo. I'm gonna start that rumor going. Mike's not getting a Grey Cup tattoo. He's gonna tattoo his body like a tiger. He's gonna literally
turn himself into an actual tiger. Yeah.
Well, like, it's like, did you see the GIF that was put out there of, I think it was like the '89 East Final or something, and someone was like, "There's a live tiger in the end zone." It's like, you could be that. Like, they're looking for a new pigskin Pete. You could be the new tiger in a cage, and they wouldn't have to even put you in a cage. You could roam freely in the end zone.
I would be iconic forever. I would laugh.
Just always remember, you know what? Get your tiger tattoos. Get your Grey Cup tattoos. But on the chest, get a nice PodSkiwiwi tattoo so every time they show you, we can get some free publicity.
Oh, my mom's calling, Josh. Oh, boy.
Oh, no. What'd you do?
Oh, nothing else. I'll call her back after the show.
Oh, she's going to hear this and go, Mikey.
No, she can't. Who listens to this garbage?
That's true. No one in my family does. Okay, let's talk right. Ticats signings. How about that?
All right, cool.
Okay, so the Ticats, I wouldn't say these are big signings. Like free agency, that's in the rearview mirror. But the Ticats have signed a bunch of players, mostly guys who are going to be competing for jobs in camp. But the big name amongst this group, and the one we'll talk about first, and then we'll get into some of the rest, Cam Marshall, the former Bombers and Riders running back. The Ticats signed him to a one-year deal a few weeks back. I think this is a bit of an interesting signing. I think Marshall's one of those guys who has, like, untapped potential. Sort of like we've seen some really good stuff from him both in Winnipeg and Saskatchewan, that I think he's a guy that, if given a chance, can really sort of make plays in this league. And now, obviously, he's going to be backing up Alex Green, kind of in the role that John White played last year. Green gets hurt. Marshall will be there to start some games. But I think we both hope that Alex Green plays a full 18-game schedule and just runs roughshod over the league like he has in the minimal time we've seen him on the field so far in his career. But I kind of like this signing. I think this is a good depth signing. I think, like I said, he's got some untapped potential there. And I always kind of liked him when he was with the Bombers and the Riders. So I'm thumbs up on this. What about you?
Yeah, I'm thumbs up as well. He's a bit different running back than Alex Green. You know me, he's more of a bruiser, more of a big guy. He can run over people. I've always liked to watch him play. So now that he's a member of the Ticats, I'm pretty excited about it. I think he can, you know, he's obviously, like you said, he's not going to be the starter, but I think he can contribute in this offense for sure.
Yeah, I wonder if they're going to try to get two running backs on the game day. I know it's like almost impossible to do that, especially if a guy, I don't believe Marshall plays any special team, so it's very difficult to have a second international running back on the game day roster if they're not contributing on special teams. But who knows, maybe they can throw him in the return game. I don't know. I don't see it. I'm with you. He's more of a big bruising back than sort of the scat back type you normally have on specials. So I don't know. He seems to be, you know, the insurance policy. John White went and signed with BC.
Exactly.
Believe he'll be the starter there, and you know, now they have Marshall to sort of take that role from White. And as much as it sucks, we'll probably see some playing time this year because Alex Green has shown his ability to stay healthy is not up there with the league's elite, to say it lightly.
Yeah, it's tough for it. You know, running back's a very demanding position, as we all know. It's very physical. You get hit a lot. So he's definitely a good insurance policy backing up Alex Green. I'll have no problem with him coming into the game. I won't have any worries about it.
So they signed a bunch of other players too. International defensive back Dante Blackman, who I believe was with the team for a few weeks back, either last year or the year before. International defensive and I'm going to butcher this name, Tobena Okeke, which is like pretty cool name, to be honest with you. They signed another running back in Darius Victor. They signed a trio of wide receivers, Dontre Wilson, Andrew Terzilli, and Jalen Acklin. And they signed an offensive lineman in Vinston Painter. So some interesting, not necessarily names, but they're bringing in DBs, they're bringing in defensive ends, they're bringing in running backs. Of course, they're bringing in receivers. This team always seems to be trying to find the next receiver, you know what I mean? And I think Painter is a guy who played tackle, so could be a guy in the mix for that vacated right tackle spot that our boy Riker Matthews has left vacated by signing with the New England Patriots. So these are names, again, we say this all the time when we talk about these sort of unknown signings, right? Like, we didn't know who really C.J. Gable was when he signed all those years ago. We didn't know who Delvin Bro was. So one of these guys, or a couple of these guys, could turn into, like, I doubt we talked about Jalen Saunders getting signed, and now look at him, he's one of the team's best receivers. So one of these guys could possibly get an opportunity and prove to be a very worthwhile contributor to the team. So it'll be interesting to see where else this team signs players. But if you look, it seems to be the same place as they always, you know, the lines, the receiving core, and the secondary.
Yeah, this is what the CFL is all about, right? New players coming into the league, new stars each year. And, you know, you could argue if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it happens every unknowns come into the league. Unknowns come into the Ticats, and then suddenly they're stars after, you know, playing a couple weeks, making some big plays. So you never know what's going to happen with these guys. Maybe a lot of them just, you know, fade into the distance, and maybe one or two of them comes through and is a starter at the start of the season.
Yeah, it could be a start. Could be a very valuable backup or special teams player as well. Like, mm-hmm. You never know with these guys. And that's kind of the thing about the CFL, is that unknowns come in and become household names in an instant. They get an opportunity and they roll with it. And sometimes, like, Dontre Wilson's a guy who I believe was, and reading about him, was on BC's, I want to say, their practice roster last year. So he's a guy who's got a little familiarity. Maybe that's someone the Ticats looked at. Again, could be a connection with, they got a lot of BC coaches now on this coaching staff, with Jeff Reinbold coming over and Mark Washington. Now, you know, Wilson plays receiver, so maybe that's a guy that Reinbold's like, hey, we had him in BC. He's a guy that can contribute on special teams. Maybe he gets a shot as a returner. Who knows? I looked into him. He played both receiver and running back at Ohio State. So, yeah, pretty darn big school to, you know, just kind of fell
through
the
cracks.
Whoa,
whoa, whoa. Josh, how disrespectful.
Oh, should I have said the Ohio State
University?
Yes,
you should have.
No,
yes.
No. Ohio State sucks. That's where I'm going with that. But you know what I mean? Like, that's a pretty big school. Yeah. It's a pretty good pedigree to come from. If he's a guy that just never really got an opportunity to play a bunch, you know, you don't get a scholarship at Ohio State not
if
for
you
sucking.
suck.
You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah,
guy's gonna have some
exactly.
skills. Maybe he's better suited for the CFL, and who knows?
No, is you got his height and weight kind of deal, or is he a smaller guy, or?
You know what? I don't have that written down. That's
That's
poor
fair.
research on my part.
That's okay. Well,
That's
I didn't have any stats on him at all, either,
You're
or
like, I
any of
didn't
the
even know
players.
his
So,
name.
yeah, it's all good. I just wonder if he's sunk into that typical June Jones receiver or not. But
Oh, you know
I
what,
guess.
though? We're going to find out in a second. This is going to be
Okay, fair enough.
thrilling, thrilling radio. You know what? You type his name in, and the second one that comes up is BC Lions. He's 5'10", 185 pounds. So,
There you go.
yep,
There you go.
June Jones to a T.
I like it. I like it a lot.
Yeah, so, you know, these guys we're going to see come training camp time and in the preseason, and who knows, maybe one of them will become a household name. Speaking of household names, Michael, there is a band around these parts that is a pretty big household name. They're known as the Arkells. They sing Tie Cats Are Hummin', the Tie Cats touchdown song that they still play every time the Tie Cats score a touchdown at Tim Hortons Field. They have a concert set for June 22nd in Toronto at, I want to say it's like Ontario Place, which is a stone's throw away from BMO Field. That was going to start at the exact same time that another event was taking place, this one at BMO Field. It was the Hamilton Tiger Cats playing the Toronto Argonauts in week two of CFL action. The Arkells go on Twitter and say, hey guys, why don't we move this game from a 7 p.m. kickoff to a 4 p.m. kickoff, and then everyone can leave the game and walk across the street and come to the concert. And it happened. The league, TSN, and the two teams got together and made this happen. I was shocked. Like,
same here.
How does it? How did really this worked?
I don't know how a band. I understand. You know, they're a pretty big band. I only know them from the Tie Cats Are Hummin' song, but I understand that they have a really big following. But still, I was absolutely flabbergasted that they actually changed it. Like, I was like, no way they're gonna change the scheduled game time. First, you have to talk to TSN, and then, you know, the Argonauts, and, you know, it's kind of weird, to be honest, because they're, what about like all the Argonaut fans that were planning on going at 7 p.m. You know, maybe they had plans or something. I don't know. It's just very strange that this actually went through.
Come on. You don't think like 14 people can change their plans?
True. Yeah.
No,
I think
it's really cool. Like, I'm not going to mince words here. I don't listen to a ton of the Arkells. That's not my style of music. I am 90s hip hop through and through. It's what I like to listen to. I will dabble in some new stuff every now and then. I've heard some Arkell stuff. They're talented. I will go on record right now as I think that there is no way in hell they are not the halftime performance at the 2021 Grey Cup here in Hamilton. Like,
right.
I feel like
yeah.
they're almost waiting for that game before they let them do a halftime. Because people have been saying, make the Arkells the halftime show. Make their 2021, no doubt in my mind. You want to go Canadian, you want to go local. They're big Tie Cats supporters, big like City of Hamilton supporters. I can't imagine that's probably has already been like set in stone. You know what I mean? Like they're going to be at halftime. Like they're a pretty big band. So I don't know. I guess they use a little bit of their sway, and I'm planning on going to that Argos Tie Cats game. And I don't know, maybe I will mosey across the street and go see them play, and maybe I'll get into a new band.
There you go. Yeah. Like I have no problem with it personally. I was surprised
that
they
had
this much pull, you know?
Yeah. Same here. Especially because of having to change the TV time. Like, to me, if this was a preseason game, like back in the day, this would have been one of the preseason games because of when it's taking place. Late June, like, season started, or, you know, probably would have been the second of the two preseason games. That, it's like, okay, well, that's not on TV, and that's a very easy thing to move. But to move a week two game, the Argos home opener at that, boom, it's like, why was that 7 p.m. on a Saturday anyway? I don't really get. That should be, like, why wasn't that just a 4 p.m. kickoff to begin with, or even a 1 p.m. kickoff? Like, it's a Saturday
Maybe
afternoon.
Is there
in
another
June.
Game? Is there another game on that day or something?
But
Maybe?
Even if there, yeah. But even if they've done, even if there's a game at like 10 that day, like a West Coast, like a BC game, they've done it before where they've had games and then had a break. Like I remember there was,
True.
I want to say I went to a Tie Cats game that ended like started here at 4, and then like a Stamps game started at 9. So it's like, I don't know. Seems like you could have done, but yeah, if it's a doubleheader, maybe they want to do them back to back. But I don't know. I think it's pretty cool. I think. And who knows? Maybe the Arkells will come over and do a little performance. They'll do Ty Cats Are Humming in the at the tailgate or in the parking lot at BMO Field prior to the game.
That would be pretty awesome, actually. It would make sense if they could get them to do a little jam session. I don't know, at like halftime or something. Maybe they figure something out. Yeah, it would be pretty neat.
Yeah, can you imagine a Ty Cats friendly band doing halftime at an Argos game? Pretty funny.
I
mean, there's gonna be a lot
laugh.
Of Ty Cats fan there anyway.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Okay, so that's pretty much it for Ty Cats news. But the reason that you and I got together was all the news that came out league wide. And I guess we'll start with probably the oldest bit of news and something that we just haven't had a chance to touch on. And that is the end of the Johnny Manziel era in the CFL. The Alouettes released him, oh, I think it was like 2 or 3 days after you and I recorded our last show. We can get into the whole, the league forced him to do it. Did he violate, like he violated the terms of his agreement to play in the league, and now the league won't register a contract with him? Did he do it on purpose? Because just this past weekend, he played in the AAF game after signing earlier in the week with the Memphis Express of the AAF.
Yep.
We spent so much time talking about this guy, and he was in the league for, what, 8 months?
Yeah, it didn't last very long, and to our credit, we didn't talk about him a ton. We didn't talk about him.
We had a bit
for
of
a
moratorium.
Long time. We
yes,
did.
We did.
Well, yeah, didn't last very long. I personally think that he got out of the contract on purpose.
I do too.
You know, that's just my thoughts on it. And, you know, I guess he's happy to be in the AAF now. He's making less money. I presume if he's getting the same contract as everyone else in the AAF, you know, $70,000 the first year, he could have made up to, I believe it was around $200,000.
Well,
he would have made in his second contract.
On February 1st, he was getting a $75,000 bonus. Now, he wouldn't have received that bonus because teams are not paying out bonuses this offseason until a new CBA is signed. But I think with that bonus and his guaranteed money in his contract, he would have been pushing almost $300,000.
Yeah, exactly. So, obviously, this isn't a money move. I just question his thinking about this. I mean, NFL teams probably wanted to see, you know, some maturity from him when he joined the CFL, a commitment. They probably aren't too keen on hearing about, you know, mispractices, showing up late, all this stuff that we heard reports about. I believe Dunk reported on that. And also, like, he didn't get very much film in the CFL either. And the film that he got wasn't too great. I mean, he had 5 touchdowns and like 7 interceptions. I don't know how this is going to go for him. I just don't see him getting back into the, I think he thinks that he's going to go down to the AF, play 4 games, get some film, and then he'll sign with an NFL team this upcoming season. And I just don't see that happening.
No, I mean, I don't either. Maybe the Raiders, because John Gruden's a fool and could do something like that. But
yeah.
I think he plays in the AAF, and I think he's the face of the XFL for the one season they'll be in existence next year. Like, mm-hmm. I just don't get the feeling. To say I've been a Johnny Manziel supporter is incorrect. I just think of what I saw when he was in college, and just every step of the way, I thought, okay, in the NFL, he was playing for the Browns, and they were a shit show. And then he comes to Canada, and, okay, he's a backup. He doesn't get a chance to play. Then he goes to Montreal, who are basically what the Cleveland Browns were to the CFL, and he gets thrown into the fire and doesn't play. And it's like, I always feel like...
And now he's at Memphis, is the worst team in
the
AAF.
The worst team in the AAF. So it's like, and they're making the same mistakes that Montreal make, where it's like, he's been there, what, like 6 days, they're like, go play. And I know from what you told me before we started recording, because I didn't watch the game, he didn't play much. But you got to think that at some point, just to get butts in seats, they're going to – Johnny Manziel, like the same – they're going to make the same mistakes the Alouettes made, and he's just not going to be ready. And I'm just starting to think, the more I watch him play at a professional level, that he's just not good enough.
No, he's just not a pro quarterback, it seems.
He's not.
And maybe he has the talent – but I was saying this on Twitter. Maybe he has the talent, but he just doesn't seem to want to put in the work. He just thinks he can roam into a team and dominate and get back to the NFL. And that I don't care what level you're at in pro football. You're not going to be able to succeed if you don't put in the work. This isn't college. You know what I mean? Like, the guy has to try harder. You know, he just can't coast on his past.
Well, when we hear stuff like he's missing practices and like there was that one little tidbit about how he didn't show up for a practice with the Ticats and they sent a player to his house to go get him because he was playing video games. Like,
yeah,
it seems like the commitment to the game is not there and he's just relying on pure athleticism. The problem is you're not in the SEC anymore. You're not playing against guys who are going to be future accountants and lawyers and senators. You're playing against all professionals. Like, it's just if you're not putting in the work, you're not going to be successful. The guys who succeed are not always the most physically gifted. They're not the most, you know, they don't have the otherworldly talent. They put in the most work and they hone their craft. Like Brandon Banks is a prime example of this. He's a guy who's got immense talent, but you can clearly tell he puts in the work. Jeremiah Mazzoli, another great example, a guy who was at the bottom of the bottom. You know what I mean? Like, practice roster quarterback, but he stays late and he's there early and he's breaking down film. And you can see Bo Levi Mitchell's another example, started in the league as a third string quarterback. Like, you look at the guys just in the CFL who are successful, and you look at the guy, like, without injuries, you think of guys like Zach Calero started as a backup, Trevor Harris started as a, like, you go down the list, Matt Nichols, like, there's not a ton of guys who just come into this league fresh and start from day one and are great. The last one I can remember off the top of my head, honestly, is Ricky Ray. Ricky Ray came in and he sat for a little bit behind Jason Moss, but then as soon as he got the reins, it was like, there starts the Hall of Fame career, right?
Yeah, rookie Ricky Ray.
Yeah, but you look at most guys and it takes a couple of years. Like, it's guys in their late 20s to early 30s before they really get a chance to shine. That's because they study the game. They put the work in. And it's same in the NFL. You look at guys like, no one's going to say that Tom Brady is the most gifted athlete in the National Football League, but he's one of the greatest of all time. Some will argue the greatest of all time. I won't make that argument because I don't agree with that, but that's neither here nor there. He's playing – he's 42 years old. He's still playing at a high level, and that's not because of his physical talents. That's because of what he's got in his head. And Johnny Manziel just doesn't seem like he wants to put in that extra work. And if you're not going to, I don't care what level of professional football you play at, whether it's the AAF, whether it's the Indoor Football League or the Arena Football League or the CFL – you're not going to be successful. And I think that we just have to kind of accept that what we saw at Texas A&M is he's a great college quarterback, but as when it comes to being a professional, he just doesn't have it.
No, and I think he's lost a step too in his speed as well. He's not, or maybe the athletes are just better at this. Obviously they are, but he just doesn't seem to be able to get away like he used to be able to, you know, those spectacular plays he used to make at Texas A&M. He just doesn't have that anymore. And it's, I feel like he just poo-pooed the CFL. Like, he just didn't give a damn. He fooled me. You know, I thought he was saying all the right things.
Same here.
And all those press conferences, he spoke well and, you know, said he was putting in the work and all that crap. And it was just a bunch of bull crap. So, you know, I feel like he just kind of took a dump on the league. And, I get that's, he doesn't want to be a lifer in the CFL. I get that. But, you know, the league gave him an opportunity when no one else would, and he didn't really seem to appreciate it.
No, and, like, you can talk about being, like, whatever you want to say about playing in the CFL, but if you look at the guys who did make their life up here, look at a guy like Bo Levi Mitchell, had the opportunity at 28 years old to go down to the NFL, looked around the landscape, didn't get what he liked, and said, you know what? There's nothing wrong with Canada. And you look at a guy like Mike Riley or a guy like Anthony Calvillo, who, like, yeah, maybe you don't become the multimillionaire you would if you played in the NFL, but I don't know. There's something to be said about guys that are willing to kind of stick it out. And you see those guys, and those are the guys, whether they're on your team or not, I think you root for them. And I was rooting for Johnny Manziel to succeed. Even when he got traded to Montreal, I was like, man, I really hope he figures it out and turns it around. But you're right. You just kind of – you look at the way he's acted afterwards and sort of in the immediate aftermath of his release, kind of just spit in the face of the league. And I mean, good riddance, I guess. Like, the league's going to survive without Johnny. It survived without him before. It'll survive without him now. This will be an interesting footnote on his career and on the league 20 years from now. Oh yeah, remember Johnny Manziel played up here, and like
Yep.
that'll be about it. He'll be forgotten, like every other big name guy that came up here thinking they dominate and got a giant dose of reality.
I guess it was just, and it's funny, I've heard some comments that CFL fans have like lost their mind over, and I don't find them that offensive. Like there was an interview with him recently where he said he just didn't understand the game and the CFL game or something like that, and it
Oh, and
wasn't
people
that
got all
bad.
up in arms about it. Yeah,
Yeah,
people
it
get
was. I
disrespected. I
didn't
didn't feel
see.
that either.
No, but I do feel that he took the league for granted for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about some more news. That's it. Johnny Manziel is done. I don't think we're ever going to talk about him. I mean, I know we've said this a number of times in the past, but I feel like this is it. I don't think we're ever going to say his name on the show again.
I don't think so. I don't think we'll have the need. I mean, unless he comes crawling back to the league at some point, and but I don't see that happening. So
No,
yeah,
so I guess
I think the Johnny talk is done on Pots Kiwiwi.
I think it is. I think we pour one out for Johnny Manziel, and I wonder what all those people out there that were pissed off about the trade or thought he got a raw deal think now. I don't know. I'm sure some of
Well,
them are
there's still these
probably.
defenders out there.
Yeah, there always will be, right? There's always sycophants out there for everybody.
Yes,
Okay,
true,
let's
true.
talk about some proposed rule changes that the league is looking to enforce. I guess they had a bit of a competition committee meeting or what have you. And they came up with a number of proposed rule changes. Most of them, Mike, I think could be easily said to revolve around player safety, especially when it comes to roughing the passer and to hits on the quarterback. So I think we saw it last year when you remember the Zach Collaros hit. Obviously, there was a hit on Bo Levi Mitchell that went uncalled. There was a really bad one on Travis Lule when they played Ottawa, where he took one on the chin and was bleeding from the chin, had to leave the game, and it wasn't called. So I think with all that happening, I think the league is moving in the right direction. They're going to allow, or th these are, so this hasn't been enacted yet. These are just proposed rule changes, but they're looking to have review be able to assist in calling any obvious missed roughing the passer penalties. They're looking at being able to upgrade a roughing the passer penalty to a 25-yard penalty from 15 to 25 yards, which is incredible. Two, and if you get two of those in a game, you're tossed, which I think is. Personally, I think that's a really good rule. I think, and if a guy gets 50 yards in penalties, I imagine most coaches don't want to put him on the field anyway. And the other one about quarterbacks is now when they slide in any direction, head first, feet first, shoulder first, whatever, that's the end of the play. So that's a kind of interesting in the way football is being held. So what do you kind of think about the like? Are you in favor of review assisting? Are you in favor of sort of the flagrant foul review type call with the 25-yard penalty? And what do you think about sliding any which way? And then that's it, play dead.
Well, I think you got to be in favor of anything that is implemented that will keep the quarterback safer. And it'd be nice if, they can consider the rest of the players too. I mean, I know the quarterbacks are important, but receivers and DBs and whatever position you are, they're people too, So, I like it though. The 25-yard rule is interesting. I mean that's a big chunk of yardage. I mean pretty much a quarter of the field almost. It would be a quarter of the field in American football, but yeah, maybe this will deter players like Odell Willis from, giving out headshots specifically to Zach Collaros. But anything that keeps them safe, I'm all for, because the quarterbacks are very important to the game, especially in the CFL. Well, not in the NFL as well. Every football league, the quarterbacks are important, obviously. But a passing-centric league like this, I think it's absolutely crucial to keep the starting quarterbacks on the field.
I like I said, I like these rules. I really like the upgrading if it's like a flagrant, absolutely no doubt about it, hit to the head from a defensive player to a quarterback, upgrading that to a 25. Like that will deter. That's the thing with all these. Like you have to hit guys in the pocketbook and you have to hit them on the field. If coaches are going to try to get away from allowing their players to do this, you have to hurt them in game. Like finding a coach, finding a team, whatever, finding a player, I think works, but at the same time, hurting them in game. If coaches start losing games and their jobs are on the line because of these types of things, they're going to think twice about bringing these guys in and letting them be on their football team. So I I really, really like that. Like, this is going to be, I think, a huge deterrent to guys. Like, obviously, it's going to take a little getting used to, as everything does. But at the same time, we've had rules in this league for how long that say don't lead with your helmet? Like, it's pretty simple. We've concussions have been at the forefront of football for a long time, and this is kind of no different. I think this is the league, again, being proactive in enacting these rules. The one thing I do like, too, is if a quarterback ducks to avoid a hit and gets hit, that's not supposed to be a penalty. Because so they are putting some onus on the quarterbacks to not to not put themselves in a vulnerable position. And I really like that, because there's a lot of hits that I see where it's like a guy is aiming shoulder first to go to the chest and a quarterback ducks, he ends up hitting him on the chin, and it's 15-yard penalty, and you're like, what's a defender supposed to do? So I think adding that caveat, I think it's a really smart move as well. Obviously, it could still lead to some guys getting hurt. But at the same time, I think it doesn't just put the onus on a defensive player to not hit the quarterback. It also puts the onus on the quarterback to not put themselves in harm's way. So I like that as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you cleared that up, because I read that rule and I was a little confused by the wording of it. I wasn't sure if...
Okay, hold on. Where is it? I'll read it out. Where does it say? Okay. The ability for the command center to upgrade a 15-yard roughing the passer penalty, 25-yard infraction for a direct blow to quarterback's head or neck with the helmet when the player has a clear view of the quarterback without mitigating circumstances such as the pivot ducking their head. It does read kind of weird. At first glance, you're reading it going, okay, so hold on. If he ducks his head, it's a penalty? Like, I had to read it a couple times before it really made sense.
Yeah, same here. So, yeah, okay, so I'm glad that you cleared it up, because if it would have went the other way, where like it doesn't matter if he ducks his head, it's a penalty no matter what, I wouldn't like that. But yeah, now that there's a little bit of, you know, you have to think about what you're doing when you're the quarterback too, to not put yourself in that position. I like that.
Here's some of the other ones: allowing the command center to assist on-field officials in calling penalties when the injury spotter is intervened. Allowing the command center to assist on-field officials with called and non-called roughing the kicker penalties. Removing the stipulation that allows the defender to contact a kicker's plant leg without a penalty if the defender has touched the ball prior to contact. I'm not huge on that one, because you're going to block a kick and you hit the ball and you hit the kicker. I feel like that one doesn't sit well with me. I feel like we're going to see potential block kicks overturned, because now it does say plant leg, so you're not – I get, man, maybe we won't. I don't know. It just feels like this – I don't know. Feels a little bit – like maybe a little bit going too far, because I don't know how many times guys are running into plant legs.
And not very often, I don't recall. But the biggest rule change, Josh.
Oh, I know.
Is elimination of the rouge. It's gone.
Well, that is not where I thought you were going. People are going to think you're serious.
No. I wish.
I thought you were going to go with a kicked or thrown football remain a live ball instead of becoming a dead ball when it touches a goalpost ribbon. How many times has that happened?
Oh, very, very rarely. I don't recall an incident off the top of my head anyways.
And so, if you're throwing the ball high enough to hit the top of the goalpost, like where the ribbon is, that ball's not landing inbounds anyway.
No. The only scenario I can see is when they kick field goals. Like, no one's tossing the ball that high.
Oh, you know what? I maybe if you're throwing it that high when you're in your own end zone? I mean, we saw Jeremiah was only ding, what, two off the crossbar in one game last year?
Yeah.
But even then, I can't imagine you're launching it that high in the air.
No, I don't see a purpose to that rule.
Yeah, I don't really see a purpose to that rule. Okay, so we have these rules. I do want to ask you one thing. Is there any rule they haven't enacted that you would like to see? Like, I've got one that I would like to see.
Shoot it at me.
Okay, so mine is, it actually has to do with the rouge. And to me, my change would be, if the ball is kicked out of bounds without touching inbounds, no point. On a field goal, on a punt, on a kickoff, if it ever happens. If the point of the single point, the point of the rouge, is that you are penalized as a defensive team for not getting the ball out of the scoring zone, right? Like, it's in the end zone. Yeah. You field it in the end zone, and you don't get it out of the end zone. You give up a point. I get that.
Thought it was just to make the kickers feel better.
Yes, we're all about making the kickers feel better. But if you if you kick the ball and it lands, you know, in the third row wide left, why should you be rewarded for that? I feel like the ball has to touch in the end zone, down somewhere in the end zone, and the ability to return it for the point to count. So that would be my one change that I would recommend.
Oh, that's fair. I'd go with the ball going not going through the side ever, just going right through the back of the end zone. And obviously, if the guy doesn't, the returner doesn't get it out of the end zone, then that would be a rouge as well. But I would suggest just to get rid of it completely. But you know, I guess I'm in a minority there. I know that's never going to happen. I know this. I know.
Wow, you would get rid of the rouge completely?
I would.
Wow.
I still think there would be kick returns. I still think returns would happen, because if there's that opportunity in the returner's mind that they can take this back for seven, I still think that play would happen quite a bit. I don't think he's thinking, oh my God, if we give up a rouge, it's the end of the world. Like, I just don't think they think that way.
Hey, if we didn't have rouges, maybe June Jones doesn't punt for a single with 30 seconds left in a game in BC.
Yeah, exactly. And then we would have won the Grey Cup that year, you know?
But then you wouldn't be able to get your tattoo.
Oh, crap. That's a good point. All right, keep the rouge.
Anyway, so all you pro rouge people out there, send your hate tweets to @Mike_Ticats. Do not tag me in them. I do not support his anti-rouge agenda.
I'm telling you, man. Need to get rid of it. Need to get rid of it.
Well, another thing people think we need to get rid of, or at least alter, is the ratio, something else that makes the Canadian Football League different from its American counterparts. Our boy, JD, Justin Dunk, dropped the bombshell that the league and the PA are somewhat in agreement over dropping the starting Canadian ratio from 7 to 5, and the shitstorm this caused, my friend. They're still kind of like, it's kind of died down in the last few days and so, but for almost a week, this seemed to be all anyone CFL wise wanted to talk about. Players were getting into it back and forth. American players, Brandon Banks was talking about it a bunch. We're going to talk about what Ricky Foley had to say with his dumbass comments, but man, this just seemed to. As soon as I saw the headline, I literally tweeted out, well, this won't be divisive at all. No one's going to talk about this. And I didn't think this would reach the heights that it did. But, man, this seemed to be the talk of the last 7 to 10 days. And, whew, just, man, oh, man. Just
it got ugly. It got ugly. And,
it really did.
It's Canadians and Americans going at each other on Twitter. It was definitely entertaining to watch all these responses, but – you know, me personally, I don't have a problem with them reducing the ratio. Obviously, I'm all for Canadians playing in this game, but I think that there's, you know, obviously America is football centric. It's crazy about football. They're a way bigger country. They're going to have way more talent than Canada does. I know that there's a lot of talent in Canada, but it just doesn't compared to what the states have. So I think that reducing the ratio could potentially be a good thing. I think that there's a little discrepancy between the offensive lines and the defensive line play. And that's because there's a lot of Americans on the defensive line and there's a lot of Canadians on the offensive line. I know that people disagree with me about that, but you just look at all the injuries year after year that the quarterbacks take in this league. It seems like, you know, 5 or 6 starters go down each year. Maybe if they brought in some American talent, more American talent on the offensive line, they could protect the quarterbacks better. And I don't understand why they stick all these Canadians on the offensive line. You know, I know that some of them are great. I mean, we have 3 interior offensive linemen that are really, really good. But, you know, if they really concentrated on the offensive line protecting the quarterbacks, we wouldn't have this problem. I don't understand why it isn't more of an emphasis. You know, you're trying to protect the most important player on the field, but yet we stick in these like Canadians. Some offensive line are 5 Canadians. So I just think that part of the game could improve if we had the ratio adjusted a little bit.
I agree. I just think that if you drop the ratio, you're still going to see 3 and 4 offense. Like, it's going to be receivers. It's going to be linebackers and defensive backs. That's going to move.
But if I were a GM, damn it, I would concentrate on the offensive line and make it the best I possibly could. And I think Don Matthews did that when he was around. Like, I don't think he went all Canadian. I think he was a lot of Americans on the offensive line. I could be wrong on that, though.
Well, I am far from the historian. We'll leave that to people much smarter than the both of us to divulge into that. I don't know where I stand on this, honestly, because, look, that you tell me tomorrow they're dropping the ratio to 5, they're dropping the ratio to 3. I'm not going to stop watching the game. I watch the Canadian Football League because I like football, and there's a team in my hometown. Like, maybe if I lived in Barrie or like grew up in Barrie or grew up in like North Bay, like maybe my affiliation to the CFL might not be as strong as it is having grown up in Hamilton, where there was always a CFL franchise. Like,
probably not.
I'm going to watch the CFL regardless of the number of starting Canadians that they have. But at the same time, I think 5 might be too drastic a drop. I feel like, and I legitimately believe that 5 was put out there as a number, and I don't think for a second this wasn't the league talking to our boy Justin Dunk and letting him know from their perspective that this is who said it, like that this is from the league, not the PA. And I feel like they set out 5, we're going to hear that they're going to drop it to 6, and then the league's going to go, look, we compromised. You know what I mean? Like, this is to make the league look good, and we're trying to make the game better, and here's what we do. Now, if you're going to drop it and it's going to mean that we're going to get more talented American players in here, great. My concern with all of this is this looming specter of global players that we also saw last week. Our boy Justin Dunk dropped this too, that the commissioner is looking to have 2 global player designated spots on each team. And now this to me is where I go, okay, if my choice is between dropping the ratio from 7 to 5 and getting more American players, okay, I'm probably on board. If we're dropping the ratio from 7 to 5 and using those 2 new spots to bring in global players, well, now you've completely lost me.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on that. I mean, if we're dropping to bring in better talent, yeah, giddy up. But if we're dropping the ratio to bring in, you know, less talented guys, that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and like, did you see Dave Naylor's idea for how to incorporate the global players?
I did not read that article. No.
Okay, I didn't read the article either. I just saw the tweet where his idea was essentially you drop the number of Canadians on the roster from 21 to 15, and then you have 6 roster spots that can be filled by both Canadians and these global players, and at the same time, they could still all be Canadians, and he thinks they will still, for the most part, all be Canadian. Like, it just came off as so convoluted, and we talked about this when we talked about the Mexican Combine, and I wrote a piece about it for 3Down that I said, you want these global players, we weren't calling them that at the time, but you want to designate these global players, there's a very easy way to do it. They're internationals. Because an international is literally anyone who's not Canadian. Now, I listened to our boys, Joel and John, over on the Greencast, and John brought up an interesting idea of let him count just like in the past, like, and he brings up Josh Bartel as an example. Let the people who aren't Americans count as non-imports. If you haven't had your football training in the United States, you count essentially as a non-import. Now, it's hard to do that now with, you know, nationals and internationals that are clearly not national players. But I'd be for that too. Like, even though that would, in a way, possibly see Canadians lose their jobs, but at least these guys would be competing for spots. And it's like to carve out 2 roster spots, whether it's starting positions or just positions on the team, for players that – remember when the Mexican Combine happened and we heard GMs go, there's like 6 guys down here who wouldn't look out of place at a training camp? Like, that just means that they could compete for a job, not that they would deserve one. And now we're talking about having designated roster spots for them. And now we're talking about – so there's 6 guys in Mexico, and I know they've gone around the world. They've gone to like Austria and Germany, and there were guys here in Toronto for the Combine this past weekend. And apparently a couple of them stood out. But it seems to me like there's maybe like 10 or so guys that might be good enough to possibly crack a roster if given a training camp opportunity. And we're talking about potentially 18 like, it just doesn't seem like the numbers add up here. So I don't know. This whole ratio thing, I think, is going to be a pretty contentious issue during these CBA talks. So I don't know. To me, it really all depends on if you're lowering the number of Canadians to accommodate more talented players from the United States, count me in. If you're lowering the number of Canadians because we have to try to force Mexicans and Germans and Austrians and the French and the Italians, I'm done. No, I will not. I cannot support that.
No, I mean, I'm totally with you on this one, Josh. I just think you got to bring in the best talent you can. And I know that, you know, Ambrosi has a vision, but if it comes, you know, if it makes the league and the game on the field not as good, then I'm not for it at all.
Well, and I see a lot of people, I read it and I hear it from people saying, well, if you're going to land TV contracts, which, okay, can we stop talking about, and I see this, there's a TV deal in Mexico on the horizon. Shut the hell up about any TV deal in Mexico until you actually have the damn thing signed. I keep hearing about they're close. They've been close for like 3 months on getting a TV. They've been close since January on getting a TV deal, and it's almost
and like I want to know the numbers when it comes out too. Like we don't know anything about the ESPN deal. Like they might be getting something, but like I've never heard any solid numbers. So to me, I have to know that we're doing this CFL 2.0 thing, and here's what we got from Mexico. Like if it's, you know, I don't even have a clue what kind of number it would be. Say if it's like $1 million, I just want to know if this is going to be worth it or not.
Yeah, but the thing about this to me is I keep hearing people going, well, if you want to attract those audiences, they have to see players from their like home country in the game. And it's like, well, they don't do that with the NBA. They don't do that with base. Like, do people only watch sports because of people from, like, I don't do that. Like, a Mexican won't watch the CFL if there's not a Mexican player in it. Like, either they like football or they don't. And maybe they've just never been exposed to the CFL, and maybe exposing them to it will allow them to get into it and watch it. But do they have to see a player from their country playing in the league for them to get interested in it? Like, you don't see that with any of the other major sports leagues. So why does that have to be the case with the CFL?
Well, I'll be devil's advocate here and say that those other leagues you talk about are known as, you know, the biggest and best professional leagues of their sport in the world, like the NBA or Major League Baseball or whatever, has the best players in the world. And maybe, you know, Mexico or Argentinians or whatever wouldn't necessarily watch the CFL if they didn't have a guy that they can keep an eye on. But, you know, that's just being devil's advocate.
But legitimately, though, do you think that's true? Like, do you think they'll be more like, will they be interested enough to stick around, or will it just be a curiosity of, oh, there's a Brazilian playing in the CFL and I'm from Brazil, I'm going to watch it, and then you watch it and you don't care? Like,
well,
I don't think it's going to
make
them
care
anymore.
Maybe that's the draw in initially, and then they hope that they stick around because they like the product.
Yeah, maybe. I like another argument about this whole thing. It comes from our friend Ricky Foley, and I give him a lot of guff on here. I've never been a fan. I will continue to not be a fan. I think he's kind of a jerk. I've heard things about him that don't cast him in quite the positive light, but he really sort of like got into this whole ratio thing. And there was one thing he said that I'd like your take on it, because you kind of gave a bit of a take on it on Twitter, and I'd like you to give it here. I'll read the tweet. You American CFL guys kill me. Talking about they so much better than Canadians / shouldn't be a ratio, LMFAO. Y'all really think Canadian citizens gonna come out to watch a league full of NFL rejects without any local Canadian boys? Sheet. League would fold in 3 years, you big dummies.
No.
Reaction? I think that he's full of shit.
Yeah, that's garbage. I tweeted out something that, you know, the kids don't dream about playing in the CFL, like, unfortunately. Like, I wish they would. I wish there was a bigger grasp on the, you know, the younger market in this country. But the facts are that they dream about being Odell Beckham Jr. or Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or whoever, slide in the big name NFL star. Baker Mayfield, whoever, you know, I don't think it's going to make that big of a difference. Now, there are people out there that do care, and I don't want all the Canadians gone to the league, and I don't think anyone really does. But to say that it's going to fold in 3 years because, you know, we can't follow Canadian players is a bit ridiculous. He's so strong with his opinions, and he just gets so, you know, aggressive with it. And I think he went way over the top this time.
So, look. I do a podcast about the CFL, been a longtime season ticket holder. I've been a Ticats fan since I went to my first game in the late 80s. When I played football in the backyards or at the schoolyard with my friends and I was playing quarterback, I wasn't Mike Kerrigan. I was Joe Montana. Like, it's – I love the CFL and all that stuff, but kids will gravitate towards – like we're going to have a soccer team here in Hamilton. We're going to have a basketball team here in Hamilton, and I'm going to go to the games. I already have season tickets for Forge FC. I'll probably try to hit up a couple of the basketball games. Guys aren't going to start. Canadian kids aren't going to be like, "Whoa, there's a Canadian basketball league, so I want to emulate these guys." No, they're going to be like, "I want to be LeBron. I want to be Michael Jordan. You know what I mean?" Like,
yep.
Like you said with like Mexicans and all those other nations not getting into the CFL because there's another league that's the best of the best. That's the same thing here. I love the Canadian players. We talk about our Canadian, we big Mike Daly supporters. There is that part of the game that you find a local guy and you love.
You're super horny about Canadian receivers.
I am. I have a boner for Canadian receivers.
Yep.
Mike Jones, sure. Like, I can't believe anyone ever doubted that guy. Talented out the wazoo.
Steaming boner. No,
sir. Well, and one of your favorite – what Ticats jersey do you have in your apartment right now? Number 42, Rye Hitchcock. Hamilton, yeah, boy.
Bobby.
Mike Morreale. I literally have still, to this day, have an unopened box of Morreale macaroni that my mom just took to the art gallery because they did – so that Canadian Elite Basketball League, they held their draft at the art gallery, or at least the Hamilton – team did or something like that, and he was there. She took the box and got him to sign it. Like, I love Canadians in the CFL, but like we were talking about, if they drop the ratio and there's fewer of them in the league, they're starting, I'm not going to stop watching the games. Like, no. The idea that the CFL is, and this is kind of where I agree with Ambrosi, it's not just for Canada. Like, you have to think beyond our own borders, and I want there to always be a place for Canadians in the game, and I will – when a Canadian guy gets an interception or scores a touchdown, like, I'm down for that. Like, I know it's not a huge deal, but seeing a Canadian quarterback start would be pretty – like, I was here when Brandon Bridge started, and, you know, you say what you want about Brandon Bridge, but, like, those are feel-good, cool moments, and I get that. But the idea that the league is going to fold if there weren't as many Canadians in it or – and I'm sorry, I just don't buy it.
I don't like the phrase NFL rejects either. I mean,
well, isn't Ricky Foley an NFL reject? Didn't he go down to the NFL and get cut? So
yeah, exactly. I mean, pretty much every player in the CFL has been on an NFL squad, pretty much. So, you know, I don't like that phrase.
Okay, I've heard Luke Tasker and Brandon Banks are two guys that I know of that had NFL opportunities that shunned them to stay in the CFL because they didn't want to bounce around and maybe make the team. Bo Levi Mitchell, another example. Bo Levi Mitchell can play in the NFL. Mike Riley can play in the NFL. You can't tell me that the third-string quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals is better than Jeremiah Mazzoli. You can't. Jeremiah Mazzoli went to Oregon. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he hasn't had – like, the players that play in the CFL could be in the NFL, but instead of being –
but they want to play.
They want to play the game. They want to play the game, so they're up here. And, I hate that. Like, you would think that someone who had been through the grind of an NFL training camp and been cut would know better than to use that term, because some of these guys aren't necessarily NFL rejects. They're guys looking for an opportunity. Some of them get a chance to go back down. Some of them don't. And some of them carve out a pretty darn good career for themselves up here because they weren't the right size or they didn't have the right measurables to make it in the NFL. You tell me Daron Carter physically can't play in the NFL? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, he could. I think there's like quite a few receivers that, given the opportunity, the right opportunity, could produce in the NFL. So, you know, he's just – I've always had him on my dummy list for many years now, and he will continue to be on that list.
All right, let's end the show by talking about something fun. I don't know if you saw the tweet or if you saw my story on it, but your close personal friend, James Wilder Jr., received a tryout. And not a tryout with another CFL team. No, no, no. He's still signed to the Toronto Argonauts. Not a tryout in the AAF, because, again, he's still signed with the Toronto Argonauts. And not a tryout in the National Football League, Mike. No, 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 no. James Wilder Jr. got a tryout with the WWE. What the hell?
That came out of nowhere, didn't it?
I saw that tweet out of nowhere.
Yeah, there you go. I saw the tweet, and I was like, wow, that's interesting. I have no idea how he would do. I know you wrote about it, but what are your thoughts on it?
I think he's obviously got the physical tools to do it. He can grind it out in professional football. He can probably grind it out in professional wrestling. If you've seen the guy, and this, I'm not trying to, you know, sound weird or anything, but if you've seen the guy without a shirt on, which if you go on his Instagram,
the 1 year,
yeah, dude's jacked.
Oh yeah, yep.
Dude's got sure. It's an upper body business, brother, is what people say about wrestling, and he's got an upper body. Football players, geez, the list of not just CFL players, but football players in general that have made the transition to professional wrestling. You got Goldberg. You got The Rock. You've got Roman Reigns, Angelo Mosca. Like, we could spend
Lex
an hour.
Lex Luger.
Ron Simmons. And
I'm pretty sure Jim Duggan played football.
Yeah, Hacksaw. Like, JBL, John Bradshaw Layfield played football. Brock Lesnar left wrestling to go play football and then came back to wrestling. Yeah. Like, the list of guys in professional wrestling at a
Roman Reigns.
Roman Reigns is another perfect example. Like, there's so many. He even played in the CFL, too. And just recently found out that the only reason he stopped playing football is because he got leukemia, which is like, holy shit. Anyway, the list of guys that have played professional football that went into wrestling, it's immeasurable. Like, there's so many of them. The only aspect you wonder about is the microphone stuff, right? Like, unless he's going to be a Goldberg-esque monster that doesn't speak, you kind of got to be able to talk on the microphone. And he seems to be pretty entertaining. You look at him on Twitter, and yeah, his grammar kind of sucks, but I don't know. He seems kind of interesting, and you've seen him interviewed. He seems to have a bit of a personality. So it is something I think that, if given the chance to develop, could probably come out. I don't know, man. I could see him being kind of successful, especially – you know, he'd obviously go down to NXT and go to the Performance Center in Tampa, and they churn out guys down there all the time. So I don't know. I'd be curious. I would follow his career in WWE with great interest, because it would be one of those, like, man, I watched him play football, and now I'm watching him on Monday Night Raw or on NXT or whatever, and I think it'd be pretty cool. I think he could succeed. I think it would take a lot of work. I think it's obviously a much different profession, but I don't know. There's a reason why he got offered the tryout, so I don't know.
Is he ready for all that travel, night in, night out?
Yeah.
It's tough, man. Like, not that I've been there, obviously, but...
No, but you hear, buddy. You've read books, you've seen TVs. It's tough. Yeah, not the life for everybody.
Exactly. It's not what it was in the 90s. It's not as brutal as the schedule, I don't think, but it's still pretty tough. You know, and you're an independent contractor, quote-unquote. It's a tough business. So, but you know, I'm a wrestling fan, but I have a hard time sometimes getting with the current product. But maybe if he was involved, that would spark a little bit of interest for me.
How funny would it be?
Yeah, I could boo him even if he wasn't a heel.
I was gonna say, how funny would it be for you to end up being a big fan of his wrestling character after kind of hating him as a football player?
That would be amusing.
I did hear some people say, "Oh, SummerSlam's in Toronto. Maybe he could be." We can put that. It's almost April. He hasn't even gone for a tryout yet. He's not making the main roster and being on pay-per-view in 6 months. So it's a cool little thing. Like, it could be something where they sign him and he goes to NXT, and maybe he shows up at the takeover event they're going to have in Toronto, and he's like in the crowd, and it's like, hey, he's the latest signee to NXT.
And everyone's like, who?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, probably. I mean, if he was wearing a bunch of Argos and Leafs gear, and like, yo, former Argo James, you know, maybe, but I wish him luck. I mean, maybe this is why the Argos signed all those running backs in the offseason. Maybe they knew they were going to lose him to WWE.
Well, he might get Well, maybe I don't know like what entry level contracts are like, but you know, there's the potential there to make a lot of money. So yeah, should
Well,
be
I mean,
interesting to watch.
If he goes to NXT, he will literally live in Orlando, which he's from Florida. He went to Florida State, so he'll live in Orlando. I think he's from the Tampa area, which is pretty darn close to Orlando. He wouldn't be traveling all that much to start, and I don't know. I'm going to watch this with keen interest, and we'll keep updating. The more we hear about James Wilder and WWE, I think the more we'll talk about it. We won't talk about Johnny Manziel ever again, but we'll talk about James Wilder even if he leaves
for sure.
The CFL.
For sure. I'll have to do a spin-off wrestling podcast.
Yeah, WWE and CFL combined, man, we could do. Do you remember the time? Did you go to the show in Hamilton where Owen Hart came out in the Argos jersey?
Yes, breakdown, yep.
Yeah, that was.
And Jerry Lawler thought it was a babyface move, but he was really trying to be the heel.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. That's when I actually, if you go watch that show, I tell the story all the time. You'll see a 16-year-old me in the crowd at that event following Edge as he walked out of the arena.
Edge's first appearance in the WWE.
Yeah, it was Christian's first appearance in WWE.
Oh, yes, you're right. Yes,
Yeah, Edge fought Owen Hart that night. Owen comes out in the Argos jersey and everyone starts booing him. And you're right, King's like, oh, look at him trying to suck up to Logan. It's like, nah, man, he's getting heat, brother.
Oh, you're wrong. But I couldn't boo Hart. You know, I had a tough time booing Owen Hart when he came out in that Argos jersey. You know, even though it was tough. I was such a big fan.
Yeah, Owen's one of the best ever.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so I guess that's enough of the WWE version of Podskewy for this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.